Hello and welcome to the weekly edition of ESG Now, the show that explores how the environment, our society, and corporate governance affect and are affected by our economy. I'm Bentley Kaplan, your host for this episode. On today's show, we're going to take a look at what's happening at Boeing, one of the world's biggest aerospace and defense companies. In an industry almost completely dominated by Boeing and its competitor Airbus, manufacturing safe aeroplanes is looking like a trickier prospect than it used to. And after a door plug flew out of a fuselage of a 737 MAX at 16,000 feet, January suddenly turned into a rotten month for the US company that builds hundreds of commercial aircraft every year. As we unwind the story, we'll be looking at safety controls at the company, the role of regulators, and what governance looks like amid a mini crisis like this one. Thanks for sticking around. Let's do this. On the 6th of January, an Alaskan Airlines flight flying from Portland, Oregon to Ontario International Airport, which I learned is not in Canada but California, had a door plug blowout. And that is pretty much what it sounds like, even if you're not an aviation expert. The blowout happened at 16,000 feet, and it happened on a Boeing 737 MAX 9. The cabin suddenly depressurized, but the pilot and crew were able to make an emergency landing. Very luckily, there were no injuries, and Apple may or may not be thinking about a new ad campaign after an iPhone is alleged to have survived the fall. But that's where most of the levity of this episode is going to end. Because for many, the incident will have brought back pretty recent memories of two fatal crashes, one in October 2018 in Indonesia and one in March 2019 in Ethiopia. And both of those flights involved the 737 MAX 8, one model back from the MAX 9 that lost a door plug in January. This latest incident refreshes what feels like a years-long saga of safety issues for Boeing. Now, this story offers a lot of strands to pull on, which is what we're going to do. Just to help give you some navigation points, what we're doing specifically is comparing what we can see at the surface of things and what we can find as we start to dig a little bit deeper. What ESG analysis can illuminate about the potential causes that underpin Boeing's current predicament. Now to help me, I've got the show's very own Mike DiSebedo, who covers the aerospace and defense industry, and Harlan Tufford, out of our Toronto office, who researches corporate governance. So Mike, Harlan, this is a big story. So let's start with the obvious. Mike, I'm going to put you up first because this seems like the most logical place to start. You know, what's happening with safety standards at Boeing? How do we see what feels like, you know, these high-profile safety lapses occurring in such a highly regulated industry, and why is it happening again? You know, tell us what's going on here.
Before I get into the details, I think I just want to say that this Boeing story is a paradigm of short-term decisions that came at the expense of long-term sustainability for the company. It's like the perfect ESG example here. And what I mean by that is Boeing took their product quality and safety management from a process of rigor to one that seems to be, from the outside, one guided by production speed. Because before all this mess happened with the 737 MAX, Boeing was trying to figure out how to replace the world's aging 737s. And they had to do that quickly because Airbus was going to do it if they didn't. And so Boeing decided, instead of creating an entirely new airplane, that they would go with the 737 MAX design, which is just a re-engineering of a 737 that was already in flight back in the day. So Boeing then also shifted the production from a mostly unionized force with a history in Seattle to a largely ununionized force in South Carolina. And then they decided to try and build planes like we do cars. And so in 2019, during all this mess with the MAX, Boeing announced a plan to use what they called smart tools, which is a Bluetooth technology connected to a database that would allow work to be done so precisely, they said, that the sort of quality control inspections that were done by humans at the moment, they would no longer be necessary. Basically, instead of doing quality checks 100% of the time, inspectors at Boeing would sample 1 in 100 tasks, or maybe less. Now, it seems that that did not work out with regards to product and safety quality procedures, is something we look at for our ESG ratings. And Boeing has reversed course on that starting in 2021, and it began to rehire the nearly 900 quality control inspectors that were laid off during this shift to technology in 2019. And I'm not trying to say here that tech can't help your quality assurance program, but it seems like Boeing didn't have the right processes in place in order to remove that human element from some parts of its production process.
Okay, so maybe let's pause there for a sec, because I do want to acknowledge it would be really difficult to give, you know, a full and complete accounting of the safety checks and oversights, you know, that accompany the manufacturing and assembly of a whole aircraft. It must be exhaustive. But safety and product reliability, as you mentioned, Mike, is a big part of how we assess aerospace and defense companies like Boeing, like Airbus, in our ESG ratings model. And I don't think many stakeholders in either aerospace or airlines industries would have too much disagreement with that. It seems like quite a central issue. And if that is the case, if safety is indeed such an important issue, and a company fumbles on that repeatedly, you know, what happens? You know, what are the areas that you think the company will feel pressure on? You know, whether that's financial or reputational or something else.
Every issue with the MAX now puts Boeing in a defensive position, even when it's not a problem with the MAX design, which, to be clear, this Alaska Airlines incident, which was caused by loose bolts in the fuselage door plug, was not due to a MAX design. It was due to a quality control issue at Boeing and its main supplier, Spirit AeroSystems. The two devastating accidents in 2018 and 2019, those were due to the MAX design. But this fuselage plug door ejection was not because of how the MAX was designed. It was because of how Boeing is conducting its quality assurance checks before sending the planes off to customers like Alaska Airlines. And customers, because of this, are starting to question Boeing's ability to make planes. Because this situation is one of many. There was a missing bolt on the 737 rudder that was discovered last month. There were misdrilled holes by Spirit on the after-pressure bulkhead on a 737 that was discovered before that. Now people are finding more loose bolts or missing bolts on door plug doors for both the MAX and older 737s. Now, this is why we have controversies in our ratings methodology, because Boeing is in a very, very regulated system. And so they are going to have the right policies in place on paper to be on top of the industry compared to any other of their aerospace and defense peers that just do military contracts, let's say. But then you look at their quality systems in practice with these controversies, and you see that these policies seem to not have been followed in practice. And that is why we are seeing with the MAX this quality escape that happened at Spirit AeroSystems and that Boeing failed to catch and caused this incident on Alaska Airlines that luckily no one was sitting next to that door. And so we're not talking about a fatality in this instance.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I really do want to work through because almost regardless of the industry, right, the safety and quality control systems that a company has in place are important, you know, whether they're making microwaves or coffee machines or airplanes. And like you say, you know, if you're an investor, you can look at what a company says it's doing in its annual reports or, you know, at its investor days. But then you also want to have that sort of triangulated with what's happening in reality. And in Boeing's case, it's hard to match up claims about having, you know, very high quality standards with these recurring safety slip-ups. And if you know there's this risk here, with whatever company, you can plan accordingly, you know, maybe opting to pressure the board through engagement, you know, underweighting the stock, maybe getting out of a position altogether. But there's another crucial layer that you touched on when you said that Boeing's operating in a highly regulated system. And that is something that's very different from most other companies, you know, like a microwave manufacturer. And that's because there are obviously a lot of human lives potentially at stake here if something does go wrong. And if you're an air traveler, you know, you're climbing onto these airplanes and you're probably not just relying on companies doing their own safety checks, with a pinky promise. You're probably also counting on regulators to keep companies honest and to make sure that the planes that are operating are, you know, safe and reliable. So in this case, Mike, can you tell us what's going on with the regulators? You know, how involved are they in overseeing Boeing's operations? And what would an incident like this mean for sort of future manufacturing and output? And then, you know, without wanting to create too many spoiler alerts, because we've spoken about this, when we weren't recording, you know, safety aside, Are there any further side effects of having, you know, production delays on Boeing's part, you know, for their downstream customers?
The U.S. federal regulator, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, they have a strained relationship with Boeing right now. It's strained. They are in or they need couples therapy because the FAA was deceived by Boeing with the certification of the MAX. This was all revealed in the 2019 grounding and accident investigations of Lion Air and Ethiopian Airlines, those crashes that happened in 2018 and 2019. And so what the FAA did is they removed authority from Boeing to certify new MAXes as airworthy, meaning the FAA has to sign off on each new delivery of the MAX, an expensive issue for Boeing. And the FAA said they have to do the same thing for the faltering 787 Dreamliner after there were production and quality problems found at Boeing's Charleston final assembly line. And so Boeing is in a difficult situation right now, and they even have not been able to get two of the aircraft designs in its MAX family, the MAX 7 and the MAX 10, to be certified by the FAA. The MAX 7 certification delayed is because of a safety issue, and the MAX 10 certification has been slow because of all these problems with Boeing's planes. So these delays are really messing with Boeing. Southwest is Boeing's biggest customer for the MAX 7, and it basically said, as of today, as of January 25th, that it's not expecting any of those MAX 7s to fly in 2024. And United is one of the biggest customers for the MAX 10, and it went a step further, recently saying the MAX 10 may not even be part of their plane lineup in the future. So that's not great for Boeing. And these delays are also not great for the environment, because new aircraft are more fuel efficient than old aircraft. The MAX reduces fuel use and carbon emissions by 20% compared to older 737 models. So if airlines have old fleets and are expecting new Boeing planes to reduce their emissions and their fuel use, of course, this isn't going to happen as soon as they'd like. United is a great example of that because United has the oldest fleet in our coverage, 16.4 years old. You know, of course, airlines age is always by the decimal. And they're expecting new MAX planes to bring that age down, to bring their fuel use down, and to bring their emissions down. Now that they aren't going to receive those planes, or they're expecting not to receive those planes because they are saying publicly that they've lost confidence in Boeing, that is now in flux. Emissions will remain high, and all these airlines, which have very ambitious carbon reduction plans, are now looking at this chance to reduce their emissions in an easy way and reduce their fuel use in an easy way as being in flux.
I think you touch on something interesting here, Mike, with the question of carbon intensity, because obviously safety is the high priority topic, and it's, you know, what's in the news right now. It's very important today. It will be tomorrow. It will be in 5 years' time. But then you also have these, you know, slower burning issues like carbon intensity, you know, carbon efficiency of your aircraft that may not be absolutely critical today, but it feels like something that's becoming increasingly more important with time. You know, so company leaders, the board at Boeing is having to hold these different objectives simultaneously, right? You know, combined with these long order lists and production delays and cost overruns and things like this. And when there is what feels like a crisis of confidence, you need leadership to not only navigate this type of a scenario, but then to also reassure investors, you know, your airline clients and of course travelers, that, you know, things are well in hand and there's some sort of playbook to follow. So, which is the perfect segue to bring on Harlan. You know, so Harlan, from a governance angle, an oversight perspective, how do you see what's happening at Boeing? You know, how does something like safety connect up to a company's board?
Yeah, so I think the first thing you do in a situation like this is look at the board, look at, you know, what it's done to kind of prevent a situation like this. And when we flip through Boeing's proxy circular, there's a lot of talk about safety, right? In the chair's letter, which is a pretty good indication of what's important to the company, they use the word safety 8 times in the first 3 paragraphs. The board has established a standing aerospace safety committee. Safety is part of the skills matrix. The company has created a chief aerospace safety officer role. So, you know, it's clear that safety is top of mind. If you talk to corporate governance people about how to evaluate a company's priorities, one of the things they're going to look at right away is the pay incentive structure, particularly at a U.S. company where, you know, incentive pay is quite competitive. And, you know, there's not a lot of talk to go along with the walk when we look at the pay structure at Boeing, where of the CEO's total target pay package of, I think, just under $22 million, less than 1% of that was linked directly to safety. And to give you, like, kind of a ridiculous example of this, if you, like, let's say you were my employee and I have tasked you to work at my factory, and I say that 99% of your job is going to be based on how many widgets you produce, and 1% is going to be based on how well you can learn conversational Aramaic by the end of the year. It's probably going to take you more than 1% of your time to learn Aramaic. The most you could ever get for doing that is 1% of total pay. The rational thing to do is not learn Aramaic and ignore that objective and focus on making widgets. And that's a ridiculous example at Boeing because the company's safety record and the company's financial results are not totally divorced. But at the same time, if you're a CEO, you're a rational actor, you're looking at the levers you can pull in the pay structure, which ones you need to pull a bit harder, which ones a bit less so, and which ones you can ignore. And at the end of the day, if less than 1% of your pay is going to be directly related to safety, you're probably going to deprioritize that. And that's the board is telling us with its pay structure that it has deprioritized that. And there's a lot of things they could have done differently around that, right? Beyond just, you know, they could have weighted it higher, but they could have also had different objectives that were a bit more stringent. They could have made safety kind of a super metric. You see this from time to time, for example, in the materials industry, where there's, you know, a higher frequency of workplace fatalities, where if Boeing had had a major avoidable safety incident, the bonus didn't pay out, or the bonus paid out at a kind of maximum threshold, regardless of performance on the other metrics. And maybe the biggest one is the board could have incorporated a safety metric into the long-term incentives, which make up the vast majority of pay, and would kind of make sense to me, given that this does seem like a systemic issue.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. You know, you've got the situation where safety is cited as being important and mentioned frequently. But when you look at the actual setup, you know, in terms of incentives, it's not really being set up as a type of connective tissue of governance. You know, instead, in terms of actual incentives, you can make the case that safety seems like more of a peripheral issue, which is a little bit strange, because given how high profile these safety issues have been and the potential downsides for investors, for the company itself, you know, why haven't we seen Boeing's board take more drastic or extreme steps in this area? You know, what's kind of holding them back? Why aren't they doing something, you know, that makes eyebrows raised in the opposite direction to say, wow, they've really gone aggressive in terms of, you know, building in safety performance as a pay metric or something like that?
Well, I mean, I look at the composition of the board and the composition of the pay committee. And one of the things that we notice, one of the things we flag in our ESG ratings report is that, yeah, a significant portion of this board comprises other CEOs. And CEO pay is established relative to peer practices. And so CEOs may have an interest in it propagating pay metrics that are a bit easier to hit, aren't quite as onerous as they could be. There may be familiarity there. There may be a sense of camaraderie. And when we look at the pay committee in particular, it's pretty stark. Every single member of that pay committee is or was a CEO of a company under coverage or another major company. And you look at David Joyce in particular, who's on that board. He was a General Electric lifer. He was CEO of General Electric. And so too was Calhoun. So there's a lot of familiarity there. And, you know, potential conscious unconscious bias. That's, you know, you're marking a close colleague's homework, and that kind of applies across the whole board here, right? Calhoun, interestingly, you don't see this a lot. Calhoun was an independent director before he became CEO, and so he's worked with all of these directors for years before coming into the CEO role, and so he's got existing relationships with these people who were previously peers and colleagues and who are now responsible for setting his objectives and holding him accountable. And the transition in that relationship is another factor that could make it harder to really be stringent, set effective goals, make the kind of hard choices when it comes to setting pay decisions.
Yeah. I mean, it really does feel like there are some areas that the board, you know, might want to look at moving forward. And, you know, the same goes for investors, right? You know, you want to know that, you know, whatever frameworks you can put in place, whatever incentive structures that are possible, that you use them as much as you can to try and, you know, clamp down on the safety risk, which seems to have a ripple effect across so many different parts of the business. It's not just that you might get fined, right? It's this question of what happens to production. And if you are, you know, already behind on orders, you've got a long order book and you're trying to fulfill that, and you all of a sudden have to, you know, speed things up, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the system. So guys, there are a lot of things I think we've touched on here. Looking at the overall situation at Boeing, final thoughts on where things are, where they might be going?
Okay, so I have a question for you, Harlan. How rare is it to have this kind of safety committee in the structure of the board? Is that a common thing?
The fact that they've got a safety committee shows that the board thinks this is super important, right? And that the board is trying to take seriously. And we see it in the board composition too, right? The board has included safety in its skills matrix. Over 2/3 of the board identifies themselves as being expert in safety. And so despite that, we're seeing these outcomes in the company's products. It's clear that it's not enough. And I think that's why we have to start looking kind of beyond the board to the next level down, the management team and beyond there, and asking, are they being really encouraged to focus on these issues? Are they being encouraged to focus on other corporate objectives?
Yep. You know, I think in a way that really helps to tie a thread through, you know, this whole story, which is not necessarily something that's easy to do. For me, listening to both of you talk through this, it's really been a story about the gap between, you know, how things appear at the surface versus what you find when you sort of dig a little bit deeper. Hearing that Boeing's board has a standing safety committee and that a bunch of its directors have got safety listed as one of their skills, it sounds great. But then, you know, as you touched on earlier, Harlan, the wiring that goes from the sort of top level down into management, you know, the carrots and sticks that would embed safety as a central priority, it doesn't seem like it's there in a meaningful way. And the same goes for operational considerations, right? Mike, I mean, you mentioned how Boeing reports a lot of public detail on how robust its safety controls and quality checks are, but these safety incidents, you know, whether they're tied to its suppliers, its own manufacturing, or the sort of assembly process, suggest that all is not well. And yes, you know, ultimately, all of this stuff seems much clearer with hindsight. A big incident, typically will make us look for flags that could have hinted at what's coming or, you know, what just happened. But I think the truth of it is that a lot of these factors were probably there for some time, right? I mean, some of the stuff is not particularly new, but they definitely would have sparkled a little bit more clearly if you were looking through an ESG lens. And that is it for the week. A massive thanks to Mike and to Harlan for their take on the news with an ESG twist. And thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you happen to be listening. And if you're that way inclined, do slap the subscribe button, which makes sure that this episode and future ones will make its way into your podcast playlist without you having to lift a finger. Thanks again, and take care of yourself and those around you. The MSCI ESG Research podcast is provided by MSCI ESG Research, LLC, a registered investment advisor under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940 and a subsidiary of MSCI, Inc. Except with respect to any applicable products or services from MSCI ESG Research, neither MSCI nor any of its products or services recommends, endorses, approves, or otherwise expresses any opinion regarding any issuer, securities, financial products or instruments, or trading strategies. And MSCI's products or services are not intended to constitute investment advice or a recommendation to make or refrain from making any kind of investment decision and may not be relied on as such. The analysis discussed should not be taken as an indication or guarantee of any future performance, analysis, forecast, or prediction. The information contained in this recording is not for reproduction in whole or in part without prior written permission from MSCI ESG Research. Issuers mentioned or included in any MSCI ESG Research materials may include MSCI Inc., clients of MSCI, or suppliers to MSCI, and may also purchase research or other products or services from MSCI ESG Research. MSCI ESG Research materials, including materials utilized in any MSCI ESG indexes or other products, have not been submitted to nor received approval from the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any other regulatory body. The information provided here is as is, and the user of the information assumes the entire risk of any use it may make or permit to be made of the information. Thank you.